Welcome one and all once again to Duel Within episode 128-ish. 126, actually. This is the first episode of the new year, and we're going to start this year the same way we ended last year, by recapping the latter half of 2013. But before we get started, let's introduce our panel. This week we have Daniel.
Hello, I'm slightly tipsy, so forgive me.
And he still sounds the same. This
yeah.
And we have Martin.
Hi.
Who we are in this week does not a drinking game, so he is not slightly tipsy.
I don't like drinking games. I just drink a lot whenever I do.
Well, at least with the game, it would give you some type of structure. Anyhow,
I don't need any structure. Oh.
Maybe it would help control the amount you intake.
Maybe. Maybe.
But yes, we're here to talk about the games released between July and December of 2013. As
then you would do it, Daniel.
All right, okay. So, we're going from July to December, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, I think the first thing of note... I'm trying to go through this list. There's not a lot in July, actually.
Well, Dota 2 got its official release.
Yeah, Dota 2 got its official release, but I don't think that counts considering it. Literally everybody was playing Dota 2 before it came out.
That's true, but it would be a legitimate.
If its official release is July and September, I honestly, I would consider it because I think, despite the fact that I don't like it, I think. No, I don't like it because of my personal grievances with how the game works and how the genre is. But I think it's one of the best esports titles out there. It's got great...
Yeah.
It's very easy to watch. You can see some amazing skill going on, especially... I mean, if you watch the International 3, you know what I'm talking about. It's well made. I mean, obviously, because Valve has an infinite amount of cash. It's free. The... monetization, the way the monetization works is very fair. You know, I think that
it's the fairest out there. Actually.
It's the fairest out there, and I wish more games would adopt that. But I know that games don't because Valve could literally make no money on it, and they wouldn't give a fuck. Yeah. So, I think Dota 2 is a. I think the Dota 2 is a legitimate in the running for Game of the Year. Yeah,
yep. I like it, but I. Just haven't played it lately, mostly because I know I'm not going to be great at it unless I basically only play Dota, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Dota 2 is actually one of the few games I wish I could play, but I just can't. Mm. And it's a shame. We've got SMT4 on the 3DS, which might be some people's game of the years, but if you live in Europe, then you can't vote for it because it hasn't released here.
I wish I could play it.
Yeah.
But you just went over Dynasty Warriors 8.
I don't know.
I don't think that's going to be on anybody's list.
I mean, obviously, people who like Dynasty Warriors are going to like Dynasty Warriors 8. Cause
I like
Dynasty
it,
Warriors.
But it's not going to make even
Yeah,
I've got to say, I've seen your top 10 here. It's not even on it.
It's hardly the pinnacle of what the medium's capable of, especially in 2013 anyway. We had other important releases in July, like the Smurfs 2, and am I reading this correctly? It says Tie the Tasmanian Tiger on Windows. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Why not? It's
but why not?
Something, right?
We had
General Returns came out.
Rise of the Triad right at the end of the month, which I will attest to being a fucking awesome game. But
I
it's
thought
not...
Shadowrun Returns also was pretty good. It just had a few problems, like
yeah,
the save system works. But that's going to be rectified soon.
The same with Rise of the Triad. It had a whole bunch of save problems initially. I couldn't run it at all when it first released. I had to wait about 2-3 months so I could actually run it at decent frame
that
rate,
sucks.
Which is kind of ruins its Game of the Year potential for me. We've got August, where the first proper Wii U game released, which was Pikmin 3.
Wait, the first proper
I'm
Wii
kidding,
U game?
I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
I think Pikmin 3 could be a contender. I don't think any of us played it.
That's the problem, is because not many people own a Wii U.
It wouldn't be a contender for me, because I just don't really care for Pikmin.
Yeah.
I don't either, which is why I didn't pick it up, but a lot of people had a blast for it. It was a highly rated game. I've seen it pop up on a couple of discs, but yeah, I just feel like, especially once we get it on into the Wii U, I think it's just going to be ignored for the other major titles.
Yeah, we also had the initial release of we had Dragon's Crown, which I know a lot of people liked and a lot of people disliked for various reasons. I have personally haven't played it.
Then something came out that I would have been really interested to play it, but I just don't have a machine with it for it, which is Divinity Dragon Commander, which I have heard a lot of great things about, to be honest.
I actually haven't heard of that game before.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like the Divinity universe, and you have like this turn. Let's say it's like Rome with fantasy.
Oh, and that's actually cool.
And you actually have during the real-time fights, you have control over a dragon because you are a dragon commander. Basically, you transform yourself into a dragon, and you have all the political stuff.
You know what? I might actually have to have a look at
which,
that game.
Which that's reflects like real-world stuff, like. You might have like issues like same-sex marriage and different fantasy races might be for it or against it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that
it's
sounds
pretty
really
cool, actually.
That sounds pretty cool. It looks like we had the initial release of Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons on Xbox Live Arcade,
yeah,
which is a very good game. I played it. Well, I finished it just yesterday, I think, and the ending of that game is just so good.
I heard of the ending. It sounds pretty cool.
Honestly, if you like the idea of like, if you think that games could be more than they currently are, and if you think that games can be a proper art form, I suggest you play Brothers or play A Tale of Two Sons. It's a game that it doesn't sacrifice its mechanics for story or anything. The story is simple, mechanics are simple, and they both work together very well. And I actually, it's a 2-3 hour game. But honestly, I didn't feel cheated. I mean, mainly because I got it in Steam sale. But honestly, if I paid full price, I don't think I would have been cheated out. Don't think I would have felt cheated anyway. And it's on XBLA, Windows, and PSN, so you've got no real reason to check that out. We had Papers, Please, which is another one of those games. And I played the beta version, and I wasn't terribly sort of into it. But I know exactly what it was trying to do. And I bought it just for that reason when it was in the Steam sale, because I have to respect it for that.
Have you played a bit more of it?
No, I haven't. I don't have
you,
time.
You should, because like it gets better than the beta, of course. I mean, the game evolves a bit more. And, I mean, they do some really cool stuff with combining the gameplay and their storytelling. I mean, it's another one of these. I mean, this will probably be, I mean, probably for a lot of us this year, it will be the game of the smaller and handheld titles.
Yeah,
I already know that.
Definitely. Yeah, Paper Please is definitely a game to be respected, if nothing else. We had Mario & Luigi Dream Team on the 3DS, which I know which was one of Nintendo's biggest releases this year, but it didn't, as far as I'm aware, it didn't go down too well.
It was apparently good, but it didn't set the world on fire.
Yeah,
it was good enough, but I feel like they set such a high bar with Bowser's Inside Story that this just didn't reach up to that expectations. And like I don't think I've ever actually finished my review for this. It doesn't go. It feels long, but there's like no part that I felt went on too much. But I just feel like the game could have exercised like 5 hours to make it a bit more compact and enjoyable. It just by the end of it, you just kind of wear out. It starts too long and it ends when it's just getting good.
It sounds like Nintendo lately have been like that with more. They're more sort of obscure Mario games. Like they had the same problem with Paper Mario on the 3DS as well.
Well, Paper Mario on the 3DS is the opposite in that a lot of people just hated that it was very simplified.
Oh, right, okay.
All the RPG unit systems were taken out.
That's kind of a shame. What else do we have? We had DuckTales Remastered.
Which doesn't count since it's a remake.
I don't know. I mean, okay, I'll give you that.
One of my personal highlights. Which
what, EU4?
Yes, EU4. I played a lot of EU4. I played, like, I think, 30 hours of EU4. I mean, it's just so amazing what they are able to pull off with you, for the most part, looking at the map and the kind of story stuff that still happens with you playing World History. I mean, I played like Spain and conquered Portugal and then went over to South America and then made a lot of money selling slaves and tried to conquer the entire basically the entirety of North and South America for myself. And I mean, it's just really cool stuff that can happen. It's fun. It's not as easy to get into, I know that, but EU4 actually has a good tutorial. You actually learn how to play the game, and they go over the stuff really well, and they have a UI that actually shows what affects what in a really great way.
It so sounds
they
like
have come they have come a long way.
It sounds like Europa Universalis 4 is Paradox doing exactly what Paradox does best, which is making kind of niche, grand strategy titles that really work very well. And obviously, if you know the name Paradox, then you obviously know whether you're going to like the game or not, pretty much off the bat.
But I wouldn't discourage anyone from at least giving it a shot.
Yeah.
I mean, there are demos out there for all their titles, as far as I'm aware. There's a demo for EU4. Give it a shot. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it. It's not for everyone. I completely understand that, but for some reason, some of their games just really hook me.
Paradox titles tend to be the kind of Marmite games where you either completely love them or they're just not your kind of thing at all.
It depends for me even as well. I mean, I'm for example, not into Hearts of Iron. That's even too much for me.
All right. Well,
for example.
After Europa Universalis, we had Payday 2, which I enjoy quite a lot. Just I have the usual gripe of online games, which is the community is not great.
Yeah. Well, I played the beta and really liked it as well.
Yeah, I play it with friends, so I don't really mind. I don't have an online community to complain about. My gripe with it is still, like, it's a fine game for what it is. It's just really rough around the edges in a lot of ways.
Still, I like games like that. I mean, I've only played about an hour or two of State of Decay, and I love it because of how rough around the edges it is, but you can tell that the people that made it really loved what it was that they were doing, and the same goes for Payday 2.
I totally get that, Daniel. For me, some of my favorite games of all time have some really rough spots.
Yeah.
But it usually is what makes them unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think, though, Payday 2 is going to win Game of the Year for many.
I don't think it's going to be. It might be on my list just because it's a ton of fun in multiplayer.
We had Gone Home, which is, I know, for what it sort of does different, is Game of the Year for a lot of people. I managed to relate to it quite a lot, but I don't think it's Game of the Year. A lot of people also don't like it.
I didn't connect with it.
Yeah.
And for me, there just wasn't enough there.
I think the
kind of story they tell is commendable, but that's about it for me.
The ability to relate to either the story or the environment that the game is trying to get across is kind of paramount in whether you're going to like the game or not. And it was really sort of the 90s nostalgia that got to me. So, and obviously it has its problems. It has I can understand if somebody was to see the story as a ham-fisted way of storytelling, and it was kind of overpriced at its usual price. I didn't pay anything for it. Somebody gifted it to me, but I can understand that it's a little overpriced.
I think I bought it half off.
I think that's the price, the sort of sweet spot for the price. After Gone Home, we had Plants vs. Zombies 2 on iOS.
Which is not good.
Yes, I would agree with you.
I heard they gamified that, monetized it way too much.
The monetization is predatory, and they ruined the art style.
And they just patched the game to completely change the progression, and some people thought it might help with monetization. It's still terrible. I mean, they just made the game way more difficult, so you want to spend money on the special powers.
Yeah, I didn't expect anything else from EA. I mean, I know I have a bias towards them, but, it's just them proving me right in this case, which is really sad. Especially,
well, we won't get this at EA for quite a bit. We still have Battlefield to come.
Yeah. Other releases on Disney Infinity, which is, I know a lot of people have gotten addicted to that.
I heard it's good, depending on which playset you play.
Yeah, that's the only problem. I mean, I think that's where Skylanders tends to have the one up on it, because Skylanders tends to be good no matter what you've got.
Yeah, because it's this coherent thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is kind of a shame. Because the last thing you want to be doing on a game that you buy figures and use them in the game is you want to dodge some.
Can be a benefit, though.
I mean,
beyond the packaged game.
Yeah.
That's where it actually is a benefit, because then people can pick and choose what they like and what they will enjoy. And that's actually might be a good thing, even because the gameplay can change quite a bit.
I guess so, but it's such a minefield when it comes to that, because you don't know. After that, we had
Dive Kick.
I'm going to point out some releases like Dive Kick, because Dive Kick is a joke game, and you can tell by the way it plays, but I think
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that somebody can release something like that in this day and age is fucking great, you know?
It's deeper than just being a joke.
Well, yes, it's just a joke, but, you know, it's very accessible to people that that don't like fighting games. I mean, I've tempted to buy it, and you know something's wrong when fucking I'm tempted to buy a fighting game.
It boils down fighting games to the fundamentals, which is just the mind games.
Yeah, and it's hilarious to watch people like Jeff the Hero play Dive Kick, because I mean, Jeff the Hero is—I think he's hilarious anyway. But Dive Kick is just a pure mind game, and he's very good at those. Saints Row 4, which
I haven't played.
I have played it. I mean, I voted for Saints Row 3 as Game of the Year when it came out, and I was staunchly for that. But
it was
Saints Row
on my list as well. Yeah.
Yep, Saints Row 4 is a no, because I think they just—I think Saints Row 4 is—it was funny. And I like the fact that they brought back some of the old characters and the old versions of characters in some cases. But it just, like, the entire thing just felt lazy to me. Mm. And the DLC is terrible. The DLC is worse than Saints Row 3.
Part of it was a DLC that was kind of expanded out into a full game, right?
Yeah, and I guess so.
I just feel bad not playing it, because like you said, it was our game of the year when Saints Row the Third came out, so you figured that the follow-up would at least be played by more of us than one person?
Yeah, I just think that, like, the superpowers are kind of fun, like, initially, but then you just like, oh, this is normal, and there's, like, why am I still using weapons when the superpowers are supposed to be better? Yeah. And why is it seems to have some problems,
and I think probably Saints Row 5 will probably be the game that most of us will play again.
Yeah.
It's what I assume.
And the biggest problems I have, actually, is for a sequel to Saints Row 3, they sure as hell did not fix Saints Row 3's problems.
Mm.
You know, I was, you know, it's funny, but ultimately disappointing.
Yeah, it's like when they came the first time around, it's kind of weird when you're talking about the third game, but the third Saints Row is quite different from the games before.
Yeah.
So it has had its problems, but you could forgive it because it kind of felt like a first-time effort in some way.
Yeah.
And then when the fourth comes around, it's not that much better, then it's kind of weird.
Other releases we had in August were XCOM, The Bureau Declassified, which I was tempted to buy because it was £5, but I ended up not, which kind of says all that needs to be said about that game.
It came by and went, nobody cared,
yeah,
because everyone already got the XCOM heavy ones.
Especially for a game that took forever to develop.
Yeah, and it apparently didn't turn out that well either.
Yeah.
And this company's closed down now, right?
Yeah, which is sad. They made the best Bioshock game as well.
I would disagree, but
I don't think any of us on this show played this. Was Finisterre Blacklist?
It's funny because Ubisoft claimed to fix all the problems that anybody had with Conviction, but I don't know anybody
I didn't see their fixing in everything they showed, so I said no.
I will say this much. I know it's on Jason's list, but he's not here to talk about it.
Yeah.
I know he's a big fan of the Cinecell series. He was a huge fan of Conviction as well, so.
Yeah, because he doesn't like stealth. So, moving on.
Other like releases that you kind of know about but didn't, weren't...
Okay, we could just skip ahead.
Yeah, skip ahead. Much. Okay, so we had... then we had...
Bioshock Infinite.
That's on the Mac, though.
I think it was already out in March, right?
Yeah, I think we can skip ahead to September, because the rest of the stuff, you also found it 3, because it's Dead, Madden, Out of the Shadow. Yeah, nothing great.
And then we had Rayman Legends, which was, I know it was hotly anticipated, because it was supposed to be, for Wii U people especially, because it was supposed to be exclusive, and then wasn't.
Pretty sure
and then nobody bought it anyhow.
So. Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of sad. It sounds like, I mean, I like
it's
Rayman.
It's even getting a next-gen port from what I've heard, but I'll be honest, I want to play it. But because it tanked, and I know it will tank as well next gen, wait for it till I get it for free.
That's really sad.
That's always been the case with Rayman. It's actually been the case with Ubisoft. I forget what game it was, ages ago. They gave out, I think it was Beyond Good and Evil. They gave out something when you bought Prince of Persia. They gave you a free game on the PlayStation 2, GameCube, and Xbox era because it tanked so bad. And now their games, you can usually find them for $20 within 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad because I know Rayman Origins was very good, and
yeah,
I know Rayman Legends is better than that. So
I'm just really quickly. What are they adding for the next-gen versions? Because the game was already 1080p and 60 frames per second.
I think they just add some content
stuff. It would just be the controller Kinect gimmicks. I think.
Yeah, and some costumes and stuff, I think, is also in there.
And I know there are some people out there that are like, I won't buy it if it's not on next gen. So.
There's also touch screen, not touch screen, but the touchpad support on the PS4, for example.
So you're basically just getting the Wii U version.
Kind of.
Okay.
The same day as Rayman Legends was Total War Rome 2, which was a hilariously bad release. I've seen Angry Joe's review. I can't believe that Sega chose to release a game in that state. I can't imagine that's on anyone's Game of the Year list, considering the letdown of that.
I think the same sentences we will hear later again.
Yeah.
Speaking of games that weren't a letdown, though, Killzone Mercenary just fought and reviewed for us.
Yes, that was really good. It was really good. I mean... It was probably the best handheld first-person shooter I ever played, and one of the best Killzone games.
The weird thing is, like, it begs the question is, why wasn't this released in the first place? Like, the other Killzone game? I can't remember what it's called, because it's made by that company that nobody likes the games of.
That wasn't Killzone, that was Resistance.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Burning Skies.
Yeah, Burning Skies, exactly.
Yeah, that should have been that. They should have released something like Killzone Mercenary for the
Killzone
Vita
Mercenary is actually done by Guerrilla. What are they? Guerrilla. Oh, they're in the UK.
I don't know.
Cambridge,
right. They were previously just Sony Cambridge, so they're a talented bunch of people.
Yeah.
So.
And it's nice to see that the PS Vita finally got its AAA kind of killer app.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that. They still overcharged the memory cards.
It actually had a better single-player campaign than Killzone Shadowfall.
There you go.
I would say the other way around about the multiplayer, though. So, I mean, maybe they should, for the next Killzone, they should let Cambridge do the single-player portion and the Dutch guys do the multiplayer, and then they would have a really, really great game.
Yeah.
Did anybody pay Puppeteer?
Nope.
No.
It looks cool, but I haven't played it.
No, I don't think anybody has. The same day we had Amnesia: A Machine for Pigs, which I know is also a very Marmite kind of game where you love it or you hate it.
I wasn't a fan. I reviewed it. And
I share the same sentiments as Martin. We played it at a house and we were just like, this game is not scary. It's not intense. It's just...
They made some very obvious mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
And I think it's more of a case of if you like Dear Esther, you're going to like A Machine for Pigs and not otherwise.
Yeah.
Which is, and I really hate Dear Esther.
Yeah,
it's
I didn't
that.
Enjoy Dear Esther either. So.
Yeah. We had the PC release of Arma 3. We had...
Which, for a lot of people, it's probably a great game.
Yeah, I know. I haven't played it, but and it looks cool. DC, they're really into Arma now.
Yeah, it looks really cool, yeah. Actually.
We had the wonderful 101 on Wii U, and I know a lot of people really love this game.
Yes.
I know one guy.
I'm included. It's my number 2 game of the year. Not tipping my hand too much. It's a fantastic action game. It has one of, if not the best conclusion of any game I've played in recent memory. I mean, it's like an hour and a half climax, but it's fantastic all the way through. If you're a fan of anime or Power Rangers or Saturday morning cartoons, it has that sense of humor, that sensibility, that over-the-topness, and it's backed by one of the most... It's not the easiest system to get into, but once you get into it, it has one of the most unique and fun action systems of all. I've played in the last decade.
And
truly
if you need,
fantastic game.
And if you need any more convincing, it is made by Platinum. Why have you bought it if you own a Wii U, for God's sake?
Daniel, you'll soon be playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, I guess, right?
I'm going to pick it up in a sale because I've spent so much money on video games lately.
Aww,
and I don't have, I simply don't have time.
It's really good, though. It's not long.
I plan on buying it just because it's a Platinum game and I want to see more Platinum games on PC. And I know they did it in the house, so it's going to happen, just not yet.
I think it's not too much spoilery if I say it's on my Game of the Year list.
We have GTA 5, which...
Oh, that small indie game.
Yeah, that small indie game made by a company that nobody's ever heard of. Honestly, this game, like, I was... If you follow me on Twitter, you'd know that I was really fucking skeptical going into it because I don't like GTA 4 at all. There is not a single thing about GTA 4 that I actually like. And GTA 5 seems to have fixed... almost every single one of those problems, and though I traded in my 360 version, as soon as it comes out on PC, I'm buying that again, and it is coming out on PC, I know it. Don't let me down, Rockstar. I think that, you know, they really did... Rockstar must have gotten everyone to play GTA 4 again and write down everything that was wrong with it, because they fixed the aiming, they fixed the driving, they fixed the story, they fixed the fact that it was too serious, you know, everything about it is just so good. I haven't played GTA Online, though, because I'm not paying for Xbox Live, and apparently it wasn't great anyway.
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounds like something that a lot of people enjoyed, like, the first... Well, not even the first day, because it was really broken the first couple of weeks. But after everything was broken and sorted out, nobody played it anyhow, so...
Yeah, which is a real shame. Rockstar North... actually, apparently not even Rockstar North made GTA Online, so... Whoever, Rockstar need to get their crap together when it comes to...
I mean, when I saw what GTA Online was finally, I wasn't impressed. It just... deathmatch modes with a fancy lobby.
Well, this is it, and I thought that... I was sitting there thinking, like, even... Like, Just Cause 2 multiplayer released,
yes.
Finally, I was sitting...
That's what
I would expect.
It,
yeah, I was playing it thinking... Why isn't GTA Online like this? This is fantastic. Even though it's buggy and laggy and whatever, it is great, and I love it. And I think that's what GTA Online needs to aim for.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I know this is not a small ask, but GTA needs to have more players, and it needs to have more sort of emergent gameplay than... Because I know GTA Online is more relying on missions and doing and stuff. It needs to have more emergent gameplay, whereas that's all that Just Cause 2 multiplayer is about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Grand Theft Auto 5, the single player, I think, vastly outweighs... I'm a bit of a hypocrite on this, but I think the single player was so good. There are people that have problems with the writing, and I can understand that. But personally, I think that they fixed so much of the game, and their game was so fun... I couldn't put it down until I finished it.
I would actually say, even like to mention Infinity Blade 3, which I really enjoyed.
I mean, it's more Infinity Blade,
but it's still really good and fun. I mean, there's nothing wrong with kind of a newish punch out.
Honestly, if I had an iOS device, I would play it, because after Shadow Complex, I kind of like what Che does, but I don't, sadly, so...
Maybe they will finally do the Android ports that they promised a while ago. But who knows?
I'm still waiting for that. I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah, there's an Android port.
Granted,
at
this point,
it's really good.
Yeah, let's say granted, at this rate, my Android phone and tablet are probably too old to get it even.
That's the sad truth about Android devices, unfortunately.
And since we don't care about sport games, I think that's
There's other releases include FIFA for September, at least, includes FIFA 14, Scribblenauts Unmasked, which ironically came out before Scribblenauts Unlimited in the European Union. We had a terrible Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game.
We had two terrible Ninja Turtles games.
We had a terrible game that where the developers tried to get copyright claims on YouTube videos. And we had Shadow Warrior. This is one of my Game of the Years.
All right, Shadow Warrior.
Because this game is so fucking fun. I mean, there it has its problems. The level design is not fantastic, and the enemy design, which actually is the worst part of the game, where it's just bullet sponges. But the swordplay in the game is so... It feels so good, and there's a surprising amount of variety to it. And, oh my god, and melee combat... Because melee combat in a first-person shooter is kind of wonky to achieve anyway.
It's rare that one gets it right.
Yeah, Shadow Warrior is so good, and it's made by the same people that made Hard Reset, and I loved Hard Reset, and the same people that made the original Painkiller.
Which is awesome.
And I love the original Painkiller as well. It's just the same people doing awesome stuff, and it's a good sort of callback to 90s, early 2000s era first-person shooters, and it's so good. If you like that kind of first-person shooter, I suggest you check it out, because it is fun despite its problems, and you just need to play it, because it's
also
so good.
Also, I kind of want to give a shout-out to the publisher of Shadow Warrior,
because
these guys are really awesome.
Devolver Digital is my favorite publisher right now.
They marketed the title, the pricing, I think, that they got the Viscera cleanup guys to do DLC for it.
Yeah, and it was free, so it doesn't cost you anything. You
awesome.
Get an extra game when you buy Shadow Warrior, and they had loads of cross-promotion where you can get a Hotline Miami sword and the ice pick from The Walking Dead season 1, and you can get the fucking dildo bat from Saints Row in it, you know? The sense of humor is great if you like a very juvenile kind of thing. If you like cerebral melee combat in a first person shooter or just if you like a 90s early 2000s first person shooter, check it out. If you like Devolver Digital, check it out. I mean, a lot of stars aligned in the way of Shadow Warrior, despite the fact that a month or so ago I did nothing but complain about it.
I'm really looking forward to what Devolver Digital will release this year. They already have a couple of really cool looking titles.
We have Serious Sam 4 coming at some point, and that game is going to be so good.
I'm also looking forward to Luftrausers, for example.
Yeah. Any game that publishes multiple games from Vlambeer is a publisher that I can get behind.
Yeah. Yep.
Moving on to October, we have a GTA Online that we've kind of already gone over, but I'm not really a fan of Rockstar classifying it as a separate game when it's kind of not, considering you need GTA 5.
It wasn't a separate game, but it was released separately because it didn't come out the day. Yeah, it was really weird how they
Rockstar tried to treat it as a separate thing when it's really not. We had Rune Factory 4 on the 3DS, which I know is a very niche title.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who
played it. I don't know anyone who played it, but it's worth noting anyway. We had Beyond Two Souls on PS3, which brought out the normal David Cage critics, which I know I'm one of.
So am I, but...
I just didn't care.
Yeah, that's to say, I don't think... Beyond Two Souls, it just came and went with a fart. Nobody.
Yeah.
Heavy Rain had conversations for months and even years, and I feel like Beyond Two Souls, there was no discussion once.
I think the problem with Beyond Two Souls is it's kind of Heavy Rain V2 instead of. Because I know there was a drastic difference between Indigo Prophecy Fahrenheit and Heavy Rain, but there doesn't seem to be that this time. Just
there's even like, a bigger difference between Fahrenheit and that other game I did before.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to be the same this time round, apart from the fact that they actually hired celebrities this time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have F1 2013, which seems to be the standard fare for F1 games, and I know that Codemasters are very good at what they do.
I heard it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I haven't checked it out, but I heard it's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
same It's great. I mean, it's good to have a great F1 game around.
Yeah, it's just a shame that they feel the need to release another one every year at full price. I mean, that's just
gripes.
We had also, of course, Just Dance 2014, which again is the same kind of thing. We had A Wolf Among Us Episode 1 from Telltale, which I'm
really looking forward to finally play it, but I think I'm waiting for a PS4 port. I'm pretty sure they're going to do one.
I mean, I'm not. I would only really invest in that if I was a fan of the Fables comic series. I mean, I kind of a.
Well, from what I hear, you don't. Have
I read Fables.
I know
cool.
You don't have to, but and the other thing is I've already got The Walking Dead Season 2.
Yeah,
and
that's what
very
I was curious
similar.
About, because has The Wolf Among Us Episode 2 come out yet?
No, it hasn't.
Is there a date for that?
No, I don't think there's even a date for it, which is very strange considering Episode 1 came out in October and it's supposed to be released.
Yeah, that's always been my problem with episodic games, is if you can get it well, it works, but like, this whole 3-5 months in between episodes just defeats the purpose.
Well, Telltale tends to be good about it, but...
There was deal with, I think, between episode 2 and 3 of the first season of Walking Dead, and that's why this time I made the decision to actually wait until Wolf Among Us and Walking Dead season 2 are actually finished, and then I buy it.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. So
anyway... Fables point. It's actually not really. It's the same world, but it's a prequel, and you don't really need to know anything from what I've seen. It's just that it uses the scenario, and the scenario is just so different from what you get in Walking Dead.
And it sounds like if you're into what Telltale tends to do nowadays, you'll like it.
Yeah.
The only problem I have with it is I haven't bought it because. I don't want to have too much of Telltale stuff, which I'm just going to cut The Walking Dead.
Which I'm really kind of curious about next year with the Game of Thrones and Borderlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's like I pick up the Telltale games basically now. Now it's like I pick up the ones which IP I like. For example, Borderlands thing, I would say, no.
Whereas I'm the opposite with that. I'm going to see how episode 1 for the Borderlands thing turns out, and if it's good, I'll buy it. It seems like Telltale's doing a whole lot, and they're not differentiating them like between their IPs too much. So
they are story-based games, so it's mostly about do you want the story or not.
Oh yeah. So I'm going to wait and see on those.
Yep.
On the day after A Wolf Among Us, we have Pokemon X and Y, which I seem to like abnormally much. It's very strange. I haven't had this with a Pokemon game. I'm actually heading towards, and I'm getting quite far with the process of getting them all.
Yep.
I don't know, and it's very strange considering I have been critical of it for taking out a lot of features. But as I was said a couple of times on previous episodes, that they've obviously had to update the entire engine and they've had to make 700-odd 3D models and animations for each Pokemon. So, I mean, when I'm actually tempted to buy Y, I'm going to see how Pokemon Bank handles digital copies of the games before I do that. But if it handles them fine, I'm just going to buy it because I'd like to have... A game that I can keep as the one game I work from for my competitive teams. And
I also bought it not too long ago. I bought Y, and I am enjoying it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah,
I mean, I asked you on Twitter if I should play this or not, and you said like it gets way faster to the fun part, and I totally agree. Within like 5 hours, I think you have most of the stuff. To actually have fun with this game.
Yeah, I mean, with Black and White, The reason why I don't like those games so much is because they have a lot of pacing issues, whereas I think they nailed the pacing completely with X and Y.
Yeah, the last one I really played was Diamond, that really bored me.
So, after X and Y...
Skylanders Swap Force!
Yeah, which is...
Is that actually going to be on anybody's list?
No.
I don't think so. It's a case of if you've bought Skylanders figures, then why not buy the next game, but otherwise...
What I played of it just was fun. That's what I can say.
They're fun games, I just don't imagine. Like, especially being able to get them every year now, it's not even that special.
Yeah.
A game I was actually surprised by its reception was Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
It's really good.
That's what I keep hearing.
I'm still enjoying it very much. It's basically the evolution of what Lego Batman 2 was. It's even better. So if you think that structure was good, this game seems, at least on next gen, I'm not quite sure how it's with the other versions, very polished, fun story. They involve all kinds of different parts of the Marvel Universe, even more obscure stuff, which I'm very thankful for. I mean, I had, like, a side mission with Howard the Duck in it. So, they go deep. Yeah. They go deep in this game.
I mean,
you even get an achievement for unlocking Howard the Duck because he's so obscure.
I haven't bought Marvel Superheroes because I only plan on buying one Lego game for PC because the Lego games tend to have so much to do that you only really need one. Mm. And obviously, it's down to whether you care about the franchise or not, and I think I'm going to wait. I'm convinced that there is going to be a complete sort of Tolkien trilogy, Tolkien saga Lego game. So I think I'm probably going to wait for that one, because I actually like the Tolkien universe, and obviously, like I said, I'm only going to go for one per platform, and that'll be my PC one. We all kind of glossed over this, but I think it's worth mentioning the Stanley Parable released on October the 17th, and I love the Stanley Parable.
Stanley Parable is really cool.
It's a game that you should definitely play if you're interested in the way video games are structured. It's very funny. If nothing else, play the demo because it's free and it's completely different to the game, but it's also along the same lines as the game.
Yep, except... it doesn't have the kinds of choices.
It doesn't have the choices, but it has the same kind of humor.
Yep.
If you like the humor in the Stanley Parable demo, definitely pick up the Stanley Parable. Your money will be going to people who absolutely know what they're talking about and know what they're doing.
I would purely buy it just to hear the narrator.
Yeah, the narrator. Amazing. I mean, I'm British and I'm obsessed with the narrator.
He's amazing.
And how he speaks, it's great.
I still need to play that. I downloaded the demo. I think Martin suggested that.
Have you not played the demo yet?
I completely forgot it had a demo until you mentioned
play the demo. If you like the demo, buy the game. It's worth your cash. Definitely. I don't think it's Game of the Year, but I think it's one of the... I mean, this is the problem with 2013, is there's so
there
many
notable
games. There
might be categories might show up.
Yeah, so. There's so many notable games. It's like, you can't not mention it. After the Stanley Parable, we had Warface, which I know a lot of people like.
Really?
Whoa.
Irony.
A lot of people seem to like it. I don't understand why.
Oh, okay. There are people that like it. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't met them, but.
This won't count for Game of the Year, but we had Deus Ex Human Revolution, the Fixed Edition. As I
come on, the original game was also great.
It was good, but you know, I stopped playing after the first boss battle because I hated it that much.
Come on, I played stealth and I got through it.
We had.
Path of
Exile.
Yeah, Path
of Exile. I played it in the beta and I was like, "This is a fucking good game."
Yes.
This is really good, and I, you know, a lot of people get overwhelmed by the skill tree, and I was like, the fact that something like this exists is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm also really, I really like the monetization of the game. It's not unfair. It's the Diablo 3 that never existed,
yeah.
If you ask me.
The I just still, you already said it, but I just can't get over the skill tree.
Yeah,
I mean,
the skill tree.
It's well designed. It leaves you so many possibilities. It's amazing.
You have no idea what possibilities I've actually seen, and that was before they redesigned, because yeah. I know they've redesigned the skill tree a couple of times, but a couple of the early incarnations, I've seen some amazing things at the skill tree, because the developers do a really good job of highlighting community builds, well, at least they did anyway. So I think Path of Exile is worth a mention. We have one of my favorite games of the year on the 3DS. You don't get anything if you can get it, because I've done nothing but go on about it the entire time.
And we're looking at the same calendar, so we all know what it is.
Yeah, we're all looking at the same calendar. We know what it is. It is, of course, Ace Attorney 5. I can understand the grievances that people have. It is easier than most of them. But as far as I'm concerned, Ace Attorney 4 is a letdown, but they nailed the art style in 3D. I love it so much, the fact that I only play it with 3D off because I want to save battery at the time. The game is, oh my god, I love it. I spent so much time in it. I could gush about this game forever, even though it's just a silly Japanese visual novel. Yep.
I only finished the first case so far, but I'm also enjoying it.
Yeah. You have no idea what is awaiting you, Martin. It is the story, especially towards the end, is great, and the DLC case is fantastic.
Oh, then I will probably get it once I'm done.
Yeah, the DLC case, if you ask me, is the best case in the game.
Oh wow.
You don't know how glad I was when Capcom announced that they're making another one, because the Ace Attorney series is a series that we weren't sure we were going to get a sequel for a while.
Yeah. So but we weren't sure if we even would have gotten this translation of it.
Yeah, this is the problem, is Capcom is very wonky with the releases, and I say
Capcom is shitty when it comes to this stuff. There are a lot of, I mean, maybe not for you guys, but I mean, I am really looking forward to Monster Hunter 4. We have still not heard what's up with that game.
I think it's a really bad time to be a Mega Man or an Ace Attorney or a Monster Hunter fan, because Capcom is just so dire with how they release in the West.
I also really enjoy Sengoku Basara, and they brought over the third game, and that apparently underperformed, and
And it sucks as somebody who is a fan of a niche Capcom franchise. I mean, I've never heard of the Fit series you've just mentioned, but I empathize.
It's kind of Capcom's take of the Dynasty Warrior series, but it's made by one of the guys who was responsible for the Devil May Cry series. So it actually has a way more involved combat system and stuff like that. So it's really good.
In that case, I can totally understand why you like it. It really sucks to be a fan of a niche Capcom title in the West currently. I really hope Capcom get their shit together. And if you're an Ace Attorney fan, at the moment you're secure. You don't have to worry about it.
It's at least cool that we know that Phoenix Wright versus Layton is coming over.
Yes. I mean, I don't care. I really don't like the Layton games because they make...
I don't care much for them either.
But I am so going to buy Layton X Wright because it's got Phoenix Wright gameplay in it. So, you know.
Exactly. I mean, the mix will probably be fun. I can't get through a whole Layton game because it's a bit too much, but I think if it's like really 50-50, it will probably be enjoyable.
And you've got, even then, you've got some anime cutscenes that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
And you've got some weird sort of supernatural storylines going on.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate that much. And I don't know if Jason... I need to find out if Jason has gotten onto Ace Attorney 5. I know he said he was going to download the first three on his iOS device. I need to find out whether that's actually going to happen. He's going to play 5 or not. In fact, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies was the reason that I bought a 3DS in the first place. So it's nice to see that's another one's happening. The day after Ace Attorney 5, we got Batman Arkham Origins, which I know is a very weird kind of title, considering...
I skipped it immediately. I just... it looked like too much of the same, and it wasn't made by Rocksteady, and some of the opinions kind of justify my decision of having skipped it.
Yeah.
So...
I haven't played it because I'm not a fan of the series anyway, but I can understand why somebody who is a fan of the series would give it a miss, because it's not the same people, and they seem to have a wonky kind of story, and...
Well, here's where it ended up for me. I think it's better than City, but I think because it came after City and Asylum, where it's the third game, it's not on my list just because it is more of the same, which isn't a bad thing. It's a great foundation to build on. It's just that after the third time, it's like, oh, here's another Joker plot. Oh, here's Bane again. And it's just kind of like, you know, at some point, there's enough of the Batman history for you to kind of go beyond those kind of characters in that story. Yeah. I think the idea that they were trying to sell Batman versus a bunch of assassins on Christmas Eve was a much more sustainable and enjoyable idea than what we got in the game, which is another Joker story.
Yeah. I'm curious with what Rocksteady will do, because theoretically, they would not be able to use the Joker in the next title if they're making a sequel.
Honestly, I hope they don't, because...
Yeah.
Rocksteady, for what is a relatively new studio, Rocksteady sure as hell know what they're doing, and it would be sad to see them locked into the same shit over and over again.
I also hope it doesn't have the Arkane name. Jesus, Warner, we are not that dumb.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is they made a joke about Arkham, what, planet or world or something, at the VGAs a couple of years back, and they just go and use the Arkham name anyway. So, I don't know. Yeah, it seems to be very divisive.
I don't think it's going to be...
I think I'll just cut out my sentence there. Yeah.
Anyway, it's probably not going to make any of our lists.
Yeah. The next one I can see that is of any note, I guess, would probably be Assassin's Creed 4.
I really liked it. Remember how much I was disappointed with Assassin's Creed 3?
And the problem
I really like 4.
The thing is coming from somebody who does not care about Assassin's Creed at all, it seems kind of weird, because the only thing that, like, there are a lot of people saying, oh, I love Assassin's Creed 4. I love Assassin's Creed 4. It's great. But it seems like when you ask them why, they're just like, oh, yeah, because the pirate ship stuff is awesome. And it's like, yeah, but that's not Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it is, but it made it an enjoyable game again.
And they're like, oh, yeah, but there's also cool things like you can, and somebody mentioned on Twitter the other day that you can skin an animal while it's still alive, which is great. But that's like a minor thing that you can, like, a minor improvement on every other Ubisoft title.
Yeah,
nowadays.
The thing is, though, the stuff they added is fun, and they actually made the side quest stuff enjoyable in this game, Assassin's Creed 3,
this is
where they had, like, hunting and stuff, and it all felt like, why am I even doing this?
It really had
no purpose.
I was about to get at is it seems like the core Assassin's Creed gameplay needs a bit of invigoration, because the new stuff, it's all the new stuff that people seem to be very interested in.
The core still has problems.
And this is obviously a problem with Ubisoft releasing the same series every year, and it happens with Call of Duty, it happens with FIFA, you know, a lot. In the end, people just get turned off. And I saw some news about Ubisoft probably going to do some pirate spin-off thing, which is really cool. I mean, but the only worry I have with that is they risk diverting a lot of people that liked Assassin's Creed 4 for the pirate stuff into that franchise, and then just ruining it by making it a yearly thing again. So it's very strange. Ubisoft needs to basically get their act together when it comes to the yearly stuff, because that's what's ruining the franchise.
Yeah, they should really find a way to make it at least... every series, I think, should be like at least have like a 2-year break.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just not going to evolve in any way, shape, or form fast enough.
I think the problem with that is they don't have any... Like, you would need a bunch of consistent franchises to kind of have something fill that gap.
Yeah, of course. That's what I said when he mentions the pirate stuff. Let's say
it succeeds,
and then we could, like, say, okay, this is the pirate year, then it's an Assassin's Creed year, or...
Well, they have this, though, because, I mean, they have Far Cry, they have Assassin's Creed,
yeah,
they have
Far Cry
the pirate thing...
Far Cry isn't Assassin's Creed as far as sales.
Yeah, but I mean, we have Splinter Cell that they've tried to peddle. The thing is Ubisoft tries to lump too many things in too short a space. We had a new. This year alone, we had Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. We had Assassin's Creed. We had a new Splinter Cell. We had a new Rayman. We had a new this. You know, they need to sort of slow down. You know.
Yeah, but it's a money-driven industry. Like, you can't, like, that's money that they're leaving on the table if they don't have that out. But I do agree. Like, I mean, maybe that's what will happen with Watch Dogs, because I can't imagine Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed both being fall titles year in and year out.
Well, I mean, Watch Dogs is a different beast, because the more I see of that game, the less I'm interested in it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Kinda. But I mean, I also think that it would have benefited from the launch hype. I feel like right now we don't even have a launch window for it anymore. I feel like as this year goes on, the longer and longer it takes, it's just because it was supposed to be that game that kind of heralded in next gen. And I feel like Microsoft and Sony will get there before that now with stuff like Infamous and Titanfall.
Yeah, I totally agree. And considering Infamous is in a similar genre as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's similar thematically. So... You know, it's a shame, but the Watch Dogs, it was a real shame. I went to see that at Eurogamer, and I was like, I was too busy playing. Like, I was more interested in the Street Pass games on my 3DS than seriously. I went into the entire reason why I went into the Watch Dogs booth anyway was for the free Wi-Fi, so I could get a free T-shirt. and then I was watching it, and I was like, this is just like. I've played GTA 5 already. Like, why would I? I don't know. We had also in October on the same day, which is crazy. We had Battlefield 4, which I don't know as it's the current state, but I know it wasn't working very well.
It still has problems. Platforms.
Really?
Yep.
That's really sad. That's really sad.
I can tell you, for example, the next gen versions definitely still have the same save game bug for the single player, for example. That as soon as your game crashes, yes, the game still crashes, it corrupts your save game.
That is terrible. And we are, I mean, it came out on October 29.
Yeah, and next-gen version mid-November, let's say.
And as this is recording on the 5th of January.
Yep.
That's
it's unacceptable.
Ridiculous. It's unacceptable. And
it's really a shame because it's a really good game underneath
yeah.
it. It's just it clearly wasn't ready. QA did not do a job, and I think it's probably all to blame on EA, who wanted this out before Call of Duty.
And to be honest, I think that's it seems to be a very familiar pattern with EA lately, because we had yep. SimCity, which also had very big launch problems, and you know.
Well, hopefully they get it sorted out before March, because you don't need EA being voted the worst company in America for the third
year.
Well,
I mean, at the very least, EA has said that they're gonna stop all DLC until this stuff is fixed. But the longer it's fixed, the more people will lose interest.
Yeah. You know?
And it's really sad, because, I mean, I'm not a fan of the modern Battlefield games, but I can understand totally get why people like them, and it's just such a shame to see that... Probably in the rush to get out before Call of Duty and get on next gen and stuff, EA has really dropped the ball. And not only have they dropped the ball once, but they've dropped the ball several times since
yeah.
the game released.
I mean, if this could have still been probably a really big Q1 title, and the game would probably have benefited from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures, which I know a lot of people really decided they didn't like before it came out. It's still not out in Europe.
I don't even know why people are talking about this game. People were linking to it, to a Steam page, but for me, it's always like, it's not available in my region, so I couldn't even see, like, what's the deal.
I would just say this real quick. I played it at Comic-Con, and I was pleasantly surprised. It's actually a really decent 2D... I played the 3DS version. It's a really decent kind of 2D platformer. It reminded me of, like, the 2D Sonic games. Like, the GBA ones, not the Genesis ones. Which I thought was really nice, because I don't... Sonic Lost World was aping off of Mario Galaxy, so it made sense that Pac-Man was aping off of Sonic at that
point. Yeah. Yeah, speaking of Sonic Lost World, that actually came out the same day as well in NA, and I know...
It's not good.
Yeah.
It looked good before it came out.
Yeah.
I thought it looked interesting. I thought, like, hey, this could be a good Sonic game, but that's the way of the Sonic cycle.
I mean, I've only played the 3DS, the demo on 3DS, but the controls are kind of awkward, and... I don't understand what convinced Sega, like, even years and years after, what was it, Sonic X? Or whatever it was called back on the Dreamcast.
I don't know.
It really, I mean, I know a lot of people seem to think that Sonic's about speed, and I think, I tend to be of the opinion that Sonic's more about acceleration and managing, like, than speed, but... It seems to be weird that they still don't quite get it, even after Generations, which was so right in a lot of ways. Mm.
It sometimes just feels like they really don't know themselves what they
yeah.
do. Sometimes they get it kind of right, or really like right, depending on who you ask, with Generations, and then something like Sonic Lost World comes out.
I don't know. I think that Sega could do with the same thing that Square Enix could do with Final Fantasy. They need to stop making Sonic games for a while and take a good hard look and do a lot of experimenting with what works and what doesn't, because...
Well, the problem is that I thought they had a great formula with the Sonic Colors and the Generation lineage.
This is it. Everybody else thought that as well. And I don't know. How did they get it wrong again?
Well, I mean, to be fair, they were aping the best. I mean, there is no doubt that Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2 were the best 3D platformers of the last generation. But, you know, as we've seen time and time again, just because you copy Nintendo's formula doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get Nintendo's success.
Well, and it, just because you copy Nintendo's formula doesn't mean it's appropriate for your franchise either. I'm just going to mention this because I haven't played it, but... I know a lot of people, it got a lot of fanfare with certain people when it came out, especially on my Twitter timeline. But Typing of the Dead Overkill, it's something that nobody saw, and Sega was just like, here, have it.
I played it.
Is it good?
Yes.
That surprises me, actually.
It's really fun. I mean, it's based on
House of the Dead Overkill.
House of the Dead Overkill, which, if you are not on board with that kind of shitty grindhouse humor to begin with, then it's probably not going to be for you. But they basically took that game and made the Typing of the Dead out of it, and Typing of the Dead was great. I mean, this kind of typing game is actually something I think we should see more of, because it's really enjoyable, and generally it actually helps with your typing, because you're doing something that's fun.
That's what I was about to say, is you don't hear this very often, but I might actually invest into Typing of the Dead Overkill at some point, because my typing is dreadful and I know I need to fix it.
And they have like good options for like me, for people who have different layouts. You can do like activate stuff like skip the punctuation, for example, and stuff like that.
Actually, that sounds really cool.
It's really good, and they have dictionary DLC. If you want to like type Shakespeare while playing Typing of the Dead Overkill, you can.
Doesn't Typing of the Dead Overkill also come with an actual controller-based copy of House of the Dead Overkill as well?
Yes, I thought so. It's the same game. When you boot it up, by standard it goes into typing after that, but you can just activate it and play Halls of the Dead Overkill.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, you almost get two games in one there, and it's pretty cheap on Steam.
It's pretty different if you type it or actually shoot. It's a very different experience, and totally worth it. Also, when it came out, it was really cheap. I think it's still not really expensive.
Yeah, it's going to have to be something I look at. Here's my terrible typing. I have to tweet something three times in order to get it right. That's how.
Yeah. If you want.
You're drinking.
Well, I mean, yeah, unless I'm drinking, which is the weirdest thing. I
would also just say this much. House of the Dead Overkill, one of my personal favorite games of this past generation. So it's nice of them to find a way to reuse those assets.
Yeah. Very inventive, actually, especially for a company like Sega.
Yeah, you would never think that they go back to this game and even to the typing of the dead concept, to be honest. Because doesn't seem like Sega's MO these days.
Number one, who had a Dreamcast, and number two, who had a Dreamcast with a keyboard. You know.
I play typing of the dead on the PC.
Oh, yeah. Okay. also on the same day, you have your WWE 2K14, which I don't think will be on anybody's Game of the Year list. But...
No, I think it's not even as fun as 2K13, because I don't see the wrestling league pop up over it like 2K13 had.
That's interesting. Yeah. And it's kind of a shame that, if you're going to release a game one a year, at least bloody improve the damn thing. Again, another yearly is Football Manager... And then Call of Duty Ghosts, which I know has been selling not as much,
it's interesting. Been down pretty well. I mean, I think part of it was it's part of the next generation transition. I think it's just people kind of getting tired. I honestly think the real test will be next year once the next gen systems are kind of more stable and everything comes out at the same time.
Yeah, you might have a.
I didn't come out of it, out of Gamescom impressed by it. What I've seen when it actually was out, I wasn't impressed by. I'm sure all of us have already seen the lazy stuff of like reusing animations from cutscenes from previous games and stuff like that. It just seems like such a bad product in a way. And I'm not going to call the game and calling it product.
And this is the thing, though, is that's how Activision treat it. Is
they
treat it as a product and not something that's supposed to mean anything. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's sort of indicative of the quality, I guess, at the end of the day.
And these days, basically, what people that still into Call of Duty are saying is like that. Treyarch is basically now the A studio for Call of Duty, because Infinity Ward now has turned out like two lackluster titles.
I'm done with Call of Duty. Black Ops 2 is the last Call of Duty I'll never need, and
I already skipped that. So
yeah, we have after that, not a whole lot actually. We have We have XCOM Enemy Within, but that's a DLC, so that doesn't really count.
Yep.
We have...
Okay, let's just skip to the next two games. Yeah. Which were Between Worlds and Super Mario 3D World.
So, I bought A Link Between Worlds, like, yesterday, I think it was. I can't remember. That's how... and I'm really enjoying it. It's my first Zelda game. I've played, like, 5 minutes to half an hour of most Zelda games, but this is the first Zelda game that I actually have owned. And I am really enjoying it. I'm taking it slow, I'm going a dungeon at a time, and then sort of leaving it for a bit. But the game supports that very well. You just sort of, you can fast travel wherever you need to go, as long as you've already been there once. You can go back to Ravio's and pick up a weapon if you need it, and, you know... It doesn't matter what order you do anything with. And I really like that. I think what's sort of attracting me towards Link Between Worlds than any other Zelda game is the 3D ones tend to be combat-focused. So I'm not a fan of that. Mm. I don't know why.
I usually don't... People are going to crucify me for it. But I never enjoyed any of the 3D Zeldas as much as the 2D ones, and it's kind of because of what you mentioned, because I never thought the combat was particularly interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we just have different expectations, because I don't think the combat has ever been a focus of the Zelda games. Like, it might have been.
No, it wasn't a focus, but in the 3D ones, it's way more involved.
Well, yeah, and you can tell because, what was it, the main gimmick of Skyward Sword, I mean, I you could say, oh, you're just picking the latest one, but the main gimmick of Skyward Sword was the one-to-one Wiimote stuff.
Yeah, so. And that one was combat-focused because of that, but like Twilight Princess and Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time, like it's a one-button combat system, really.
It seems like to me,
still spent more time fighting this one enemy than sometimes a whole screen in Link Between Worlds.
Fair enough.
And it seems like to me, I mean, I know I only have limited experience with the franchise, but it seems like with every 3D Zelda, they try and outdo the last one. And I don't know, it just feels like that's not a very good focus for the franchise. I mean, I guess to me,
and this is going to be something that comes up next week, I guess, as I find A Link Between Worlds less interesting than the recent 3D ones, because I think that the idea of doing any dungeon in any order works until you realize that you can't really ramp up the difficulty as the game goes on, because you have to make sure everything's at the same level, because you have to do everything in any order. Where the 3D Zelda games tend to have a progression where the puzzles and stuff become more intricate.
I would argue that there are some difficult differences between the dungeons. I finished the game and, first of all, I loved it. It's up there for my favorite Zeldas. I would probably not turn down a link to the Past from the number one spot. But it's really up there, and I think they do actually do some stuff to make specific regions more difficult, because there are actually enemies that do more damage, and you have to remember that you can get a different cloak that makes you take less damage. There even are some dungeons that you can't get to before you haven't gotten some specific thing that you can't actually rent. So they are limiting some of the options, not that you can always do everything.
Not to mention, I kind of noticed, I'm not far into the game, but I noticed that the more dungeons you complete, the harder the enemies get in the overworld. And I kind of like that. It kind of, the game kind of trusts you more just walking around.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying A Link Between Worlds. I really hope Nintendo do more sort of, I guess saying 2D Zelda is kind of redundant now, but more isometric Zelda games, I guess.
Top down Zeldas.
I hope to see more of it, because I definitely find them more interesting than the traditional Zeldas. And honestly, I do not regret my purchase, it being my first one. Somebody said to me, oh, I'll just go from the start, and I'll be like, yeah, but I'll be on a never-ending trail if I start.
Yeah, no, I told you, every Zelda is someone's first Zelda.
Yeah.
And this is as good as any, to be honest, and, maybe there are some that would not be a good first one, like Majora's Mask is probably not a good first Zelda, but this one is... No, I don't see any issue with this being your first one.
And honestly, as somebody who never expected to buy a Zelda game for their 3DS when they bought their 3DS, I'm very glad that I did.
Yeah, and you even enjoying it, although you don't have the nostalgia for A Link to the Past that I have. So they did a really good job for people like you that don't know all that stuff from that game. So... there's something for you in this game, and there's... just something extra for me, because I've played A Link to the Past and love that game. So all the little wings in the story, or the music they use, and all that stuff just clicks. The design of the world, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I think It's, I mean, I haven't finished the game, so I can't really make a complete judgment, but it's my biggest surprise this year, I think.
It's probably the Zelda I've enjoyed most in years.
Yeah.
It has a great ending, I will say that much.
What?
It has a great ending. I was really surprised by the last couple of twists, which I won't spoil for
what, again. Was really nice. Well done.
Yeah, very well done for... I mean, I think they have interesting twists, but this is like the first one that really just caught me by surprise, even though you kind of expect... You should have expected it.
And they don't do too much with their story, but just enough so that it works.
Yeah, that's what... I guess that's one of the reasons people love it is because it's just a really clean and simple Zelda game, but I thought that was weird. Because there's like story at the beginning, this story when you kind of meet Yoru, then there's no story until like the end again. So,
well, no, I think
that's what A Link to the Past was as well.
Yeah, I can understand like you having that point of view because wasn't Skyward Sword fairly story heavy?
Yeah.
I can totally. This is probably something you don't hear.
It got more story heavy with Ocarina of Time.
The 3D ones are more story heavy.
This is probably something you don't hear very often in the Zelda community, but I can totally understand your differing of opinion.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I think I get in between worlds. I don't think there's many bad Zelda games. I just don't.
Majora's Mask. Crucify me.
I'm not gonna crucify you. I've never finished Majora's Mask.
Probably will because I know there's fans of Majora's Mask, but I hated this game back in the day and I still hate it.
I'm sure Anthony might have if he's on this show. But the other contender, like I said, is Super Mario 3D World. Which I'm not going to make any bones about is my game of the year. Wow, I'm going way ahead of myself at this point.
The generation's just started now. Calm down.
I'm at game of the year. Oh, you game of the year right now. Who knows? Granted, the same thing happened with Mario Galaxy, but that ended up running to the end of the generation as my game of the generation. But I will say this much. It's not as grandiose as... the Galaxy games, it's not as epic as people like to throw around, but as far as, you know, just the sheer variety on the stage, the music, the characters, the multiplayer, the stages, the boss battles, everything just comes together in such a fantastic package that it's really hard for, like, it's been like 30 years and this guy continues to make it look easy the way he continues to output great game after great game.
I would totally agree with that. I mean, I'm kind of jealous of everybody who got to play it. I really like 3D Land. I wish I didn't have to buy a Wii U to play 3D World, but alas, that's how businesses work. Yeah, businesses and video games work.
I will say this much. I thought I loved 3D Land until I played 3D World, and then I just realized I had a really, really feeding relationship for 3D Land. I mean, it takes everything that 3D Land does, turns it on its head, amps it up by 50, and then adds in some creativity that you don't... Like, there's some things that just seem so simple that they turn into these fantastic little things. And the thing is, they don't return to it. It's like, oh, we had this great idea. We're going to use it once, and then we're going to give you another great idea later on. That's completely different. You're going to have that as well. And then we're going to give you a new great idea.
Actually, I noticed that. I noticed that. Like, it just seems to be like 3D Land, but times 100. It was like, now, what can we do if we could do anything with this kind of format? And that's another thing is most AAA games are, if they're going to use something, they do it usually more than once. And that's kind of a bugbear on me, but I can understand why. But it's weird how many things that 3D Land does, 3D World even does, and it only does it once, and you've got something completely different in the next level. And that's obviously, you have to give Nintendo mad props for that, especially considering, you know, the amount of effort that was clearly put into it, and the console was not doing particularly well even after release of the game.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, lucky enough, first game of the year contenders don't necessarily have to be games.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing because this is a fantastic game.
Nintendo is definitely putting their best foot forward.
I will also say this much, and this is something that probably won't affect either one of you two. I think it has a great use of like Miiverse and stuff like that. It's something that a lot of games... Like, Miiverse is fun, but I think a lot of games don't integrate it in a compelling way. In this game, you get... It's a very great it's used for what it needs to be used for. It's a message board. Once you complete a Yafu, you get a bunch of messages of people who completed the stages. And, you know, some of it is, like, people validating, like, this level was tough, and it took me 100 times. And, like, yes, it wasn't just me. Other times, it's like, oh, in case you missed it, here's where the hidden star is, or here's where the stamp is. And, again, it's like, oh, cool, you know. It comes after you beat the stage, so it's not like you're cheating or getting advice anyhow. But it's kind of like, oh, I beat the stage, and here's what everybody else was thinking when they finished it as well. So it kind of gives you that instant feedback that you kind of get with Twitter and stuff like that, but this gives you instant feedback on exactly what you were saying. And it gives you a sense of community without necessarily having to have a community deal with you.
Well, actually, that's a very good point, because it also means that Miiverse is not just sort of a thing on the side. It's something that Nintendo is always aware of, and they can integrate. They know that they can, like, use it to make it feel like you're never alone, but you're never hounded by people at the same time. I mean just a simple thing, like, you can walk around the world map and you can just pass people and it will post a random Miiverse message. You know, that's really cool, and there's no better way to show somebody, like, how to use a feature in your game than something like that. I'm just gonna go through the
I have two more that you are probably going to miss because they're actual iOS titles.
Okay, well, I'll go for that.
But
well,
before we do that, can we just mention Tearaway? Because I assume that's a big contender.
It's just
not anything that any of us played, but I've heard about it. And I really think I'm going to review it just to try that out.
I have played a demo of Tearaway, and I loved it so much.
Yeah, me as well.
And it kind of made me... It's just weird that... You know, the PS Vita has been out
two years?
Yeah, 2 years, and nothing has used the features of the console as good as Tearaway does. You know, it's just like the sheer satisfaction of, like, you just use the back touchscreen, but you see, I mean, obviously it's not your finger, but you see a finger, and it makes you feel like you're actually having a tangible impact on the world that's being presented to you, on the screen is gorgeous. I love it. You know,
and the real shame is it's not just that there aren't enough Vitas out there. It just looks like that even Vita owners haven't bought it.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be fair, I don't even think Sony put any marketing muscle behind it.
And it's such a shame, because I think that Media Molecule is the best creative force that they've got at the moment. And I mean, you could say that Little Big Planet was a meh platformer, but, like, the point of Little Big Planet was just the sheer creativity about it, that you could do almost whatever you wanted, and the sheer creativity and love and, you know, that went into Tearaway, and you can, it just oozes off that screen, and oh my god, and it's a shame, because I definitely think that Media Molecule is the best asset that Sony has at the moment.
I'm just... It's just speaking generally about Media Molecule. I still remember what they've shown during the PS4 announcement, and I'm still not convinced about that.
Yeah, that was
nice. I really need to see some more from them when it comes to PS4. And hopefully it will be something good.
Maybe I'm the only person that thinks this because I'm British and whatever, but I think that Media Molecule really sort of shows that there was a time where, like, a lot of really, like, admirable game developer studios and stuff were from the UK, and that's not so much now.
Europe, just say Europe, dude. We had a lot of really cool stuff from Germany and France, and there was so much cool stuff, but it was all like late 80s, early 90s.
But the UK specifically, because the government hasn't been terribly kind to its games industry as of late, and neither have the major publishers. And I think that Media Molecule really sort of show the sort of spirit that the games industry in this country used to have. And, you know, it's a shame we don't have more companies like that. And it's really a shame that Sony has not pushed Tearaway, because Tearaway, I mean, I know they've had bundles and stuff, but Tearaway and Killzone Mercenary are the two sort of polars that you can use to advertise the Vita as something that means something. They haven't really, you know? No. And it's such a shame. So, also in that month we had all the
Martin had two iOS games, right?
Sorry, yeah.
iOS. Yeah, the first one is The Room 2, which is the sequel to The Room, of course, which already was a great, great puzzle game. It's kind of story-based, but I don't want to give anything away for people who want to play it. It's really good, it has really clever puzzles. Most of the time you have like this weird, intricate machines that you have to kind of figure out and interact with. The new thing with The Room 2 is that usually in the first game you had just one machine that you have to go around, figure out how to interact with stuff. And in this game, most of the time you have rooms which have like, for example, multiple tables, and you go from machine to machine, and sometimes you have like one machine you have to figure something out that gives you an item that then you can use to interact with another machine and stuff like that. It's a really well done puzzle game, high production values, very clever stuff, also not expensive, can only recommend it. The other thing is a Kickstarter game that I actually backed. It's Republic. Haven't played too much of it yet, but what I've played of it is really fucking good. I mean, their aim was to create a high-budget iOS title, and so far I think they succeeded. It's basically a stealth game without direct controls. You're trying to get this girl out of captivity. You don't really know at the beginning why or what's going on, stuff like that. It has a pretty interesting story going on. Amazing voice acting, and like I said, you don't actually really directly control it. You can tell her where to go. You yourself are basically holding your phone or your iPad or whatever, and in this fictional world, you basically can only control the cameras, so you can see through cameras in this installation and try to figure out how she has to go through different rooms. You can maybe you can find some interesting items that give you some form of money. Then you can buy upgrades that then let you interact or hack different computers and or interact with objects in different kind of ways that then can distract guards and stuff like that. It's very cleverly done. It looks really good as well. So far, I'm really impressed with it. I played like, I think, 1.5 hour about. Yeah, it's really good, I think.
Actually, in terms of Republic, I think, I mean, I hate mobile games because they tend to be too simplistic for me, and they tend to use the touchscreen in almost every single wrong way that they can. And I was initially skeptical about Republic, but it seems like they really know what they're doing, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, the game is a little bit simplistic, but obviously you have to because it's an iOS game.
Yeah,
but it's very good, and they put a ton of effort into it. And honestly, I give them props for that because I honestly didn't think it was going to be any good.
I have no problems with some games being more simplistic. I mean, they also don't cost that much usually.
Yeah.
So it's not really a big issue. Same with The Room. I mean, it's a puzzle game, but it's really cleverly done, well produced, and it works well with a touchscreen. And that's the most important part for these mobile games, I think.
I think the biggest lesson that people need to learn is still, I mean, these devices have been around for a long time, but they still don't seem to have learned it, is you need to create a game around the way you're going to interact with it, and Republic seems to do that very well.
Yeah.
It uses a bit of sort of AI based on where you touch and how you touch, and you know, but it works, and there's nothing that's frustrating or complex about it. It works how you expect it to, given that you just have a touchscreen.
It's kind of like an indirect Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. and I kind of like how the game conveys how indirect it is, because you have to jump from the camera to camera.
Yeah.
It's obvious that they really thought about that.
Yeah. They have some clever mechanics that they use with it and stuff like that. So, yeah, very well some puzzle solving as well.
Okay. Just before we begin, I assume we're just going to run through this real quick. I just want to give one shout out to my most surprising game of the year. Mostly because it literally was announced the day it came out, NES Remix, which I don't think I had a chance to talk about on the show yet. But I really don't know what to classify it as. I mean, it's kind of a mini game collection, but it isn't in some ways. It's not necessarily a remake or a re-release. It's a really odd mishmash of gaming. But the idea
it's a ROM hack.
I wouldn't even say it's a ROM hack.
Honestly, I would consider it to be a WarioWare game that's not WarioWare.
Yeah, but even then, it some of it is a bit. I mean, what are you? Yeah, it's a really hard game to explain. But the gist of it is, it basically takes NES games and offers up modern day challenges to them. In some regards, some of them are teaching you the basics. It's like the world's most advanced and expensive demo. It's a way to kind of get people to get familiar with these games that they might have not played in like 30 years, and, you know, invite them on the virtual console. But at the same time, it's a very compelling game because it makes you look at these systems. It basically breaks down the systems of these old games into their core essentials and have you earn them piece by piece, and maybe earn stuff you didn't know about them beforehand. And then once you earn all of that, it gives you new challenges with them and putting together all of these little pieces. So it's like the build and drops of a video game. It's like, okay, this is how you jump. This is what this is how your momentum carries you. And then once you teach them all of that, it's going to be like, okay, now we're going to put it all together and show you how it's done in a full like stage and stuff like that. I don't know where I left off. My connection has been really wonky, so I'm just going to continue. Yeah, but basically, NES Remix is just like teaching you the basics of the game. And then after it teaches you the basic, have you put it all together, and once you kind of know all of that and put it all together, then it just kind of flips it all in your head, and it gives you a brand new way to look at these games that you've never seen before. The example a lot of people use is like the Muse and Link in the original Donkey Kong game. If you've played most Zelda games, you know it can't jump, so it's like trying to navigate this space without jumping, which really was a big part of it. So it's just kind of learning how to use the items, learning the positioning of the barrels and where they're going to end. And a lot of that is duck based because a lot of them, some of the barrels bounce, some of them roll, or some of them end up on steps beforehand. But basically just kind of getting that all down. Another example is like playing a Super Mario Brothers stage backwards. A lot of people are familiar with the Super Mario franchise, so you know, like a lot of these things are kind of ingrained in your gaming memory. So kind of having to force you to think of it in a different way really does screw with your mind in a lot of ways. There's even stages where they kind of turn Mario into an endless runner, where you just kind of, you just run to the flagpole as fast as possible. But you're kind of used to controlling how fast Mario goes and stuff. So this is just kind of timing your jumps, and it does give you like, okay, you know, short jumps, long jumps, hold the jump button, stuff like that. A bunch of little things, but it's a very interesting package. Like I said, it's a big surprise just because it was announced and came out the same day. I still think for $10 would have been a nicer deal, but for $15 you can't go wrong. It's a great year to experiment, and I hope Nintendo does it again with more interesting games. Let's go with that, because these are like the first generation NES games, which, let's be honest, there's a reason we don't really see a lot of Ice Climbers or Balloon Fight games anymore.
So I've got a couple of interesting thoughts about the NES Remix. Number one is it's kind of nice for Nintendo to sort of throw Wii U owners a little bone every now and again like that. Like, you have our platform, and yeah, okay, maybe we haven't been as fast as we could have getting games out, but here's something, like, kind of interesting that you can play with for a little bit. And also, it's also nice to see Nintendo taking something like, I don't know if you've played it, but the Super Mario crossover Flash game that some guy made. It's nice to see Nintendo taking that and sort of playing with that kind of concept, because it's a very good concept, and having somebody like Nintendo, a company like Nintendo, which has obviously a gigantic sort of history throughout the industry, and is like, when it came to the NES at the very least, was probably the most influential when it got the industry going again. It's nice to see that kind of thing come out of them. It would be really cool if Nintendo could make like a series out of it, and they could sort of go up the the generations like that. I mean, I know there's only so far they could go, but, you know. So, yeah, that's I think it's a pretty cool thing. I was looking at it, it's like, oh, why can't I get that on 3DS, man?
And you know. I agree with you, but I also think, kind of going back to making this a franchise, I think it would be wise if they kind of kept it separate, and maybe they did like a Game Boy remix, and then they could get, you know, Game Boy itself was almost a 10-year lifespan.
Yeah.
You could do Game Boy, you could do Game Boy Color remix and Game Boy Advance. And
well, by generation, yeah, I meant like per console, so there's an S1,
yeah,
S1. Yeah,
but even maybe. Still, like, you could still do NES, because they haven't touched, like, the Metroid, they haven't touched Mario 2 and 3, Zelda 2. So there's a lot of games, like, especially early on, they don't make as many games as they did before, just because it was a lot quicker, and they experimented a lot more stuff back then, but...
And Nintendo could quite easily get their third-party partners involved, like Square Enix and stuff.
Oh, I mean, if you're Capcom, if you're Square, I mean, this is free money.
Yeah.
This is a very simple like, this is how you do nostalgic games.
Like, you have like, a NES Remix 2 where you've got Mega Man in Final Fantasy or something. That would be really cool. Yeah, that would be sweet. I totally agree with that. Anything else that anybody wants to mention before I round up the sort of important, noteworthy releases of that period?
No.
Okay, so we had obviously the PS4 and Xbox One releases with things like Killzone Shadowfall and Rise and Dead Rising 3. I think everybody's kind of universally on agreement that Knack is not terribly great. We also had some very tragic releases like X Rebirth, and I don't know if we're out of that period, but we had also the fantastic and well loved Ride to Hell Retribution. We may have already mentioned that last episode, I'm not sure. Probably worth mentioning how fucking terrible that fucking piece of shit is again. We had The Walking Dead Season 2, which is obviously a worthwhile title if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to mention, and we've had this discussion off-air, I don't know if we mentioned this on-air, but stuff like The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us actually won't even count for our Game of the Year, because we're going to count the year where the majority of it came out, and right now, you're in episode 1 of each, and they're supposed to be like 5 episodes apiece, so
yeah,
20% of a game is out.
I'm totally with that. We had not much else, actually, after that. So that should be it.
For Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 126, and happy gamed in 2013. Here's to 2014.
2014, yeah.
Yeah.